Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Well, that's ambitious.
Here's John Williams.
All right, now it's my turn. 108 Heights, John Williams. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Are you?
Lord have mercy.
All the way until 3 o'clock. How will I fill an hour and 48 minutes? My goodness, does it look pretty outside. I mean, did they just plant those tulips whole or did they grow over the weekend? Michigan Avenue in downtown Chicago has positively popped. I have an important news announcement about my iPhone. It broke last Thursday. It actually quit working. I can read texts that come in and see that I have phone calls, but the screen that you tap on for all your functionality doesn't work. It's cracked and it's not functional. So I can see that I'm getting texts and I can see that I'm getting calls, but I can't do anything about them.
And you've lasted this long without getting a new phone? I would be at the Apple store in 5 seconds.
That's what my wife said. How are you breathing?
I couldn't stand it.
And I've discovered something.
You like it.
Yeah, I kind of do. I'm telling you, it's very liberating. So I'm seeing how long I can go.
And you have the best excuse.
My phone broke.
Yeah.
Here's the deal, though. On my Mac, on my laptop, I can still text. So I've texted my producer and my boss and my wife and my kids. And I said, hey, just text me and I'll get back to you as soon as I can.
I'm sorry, in that order?
And I've done it in... whenever I'm near Wi-Fi, I can get back to you. I'll hook up the Wi-Fi with my Mac, and then I'll text back to you. But in the meantime, you may have to wait, several hours.
Are people looking at you funny when you walk down the street with this laptop and you're trying to text and you're running into poles?
That's right. And I linger near the Starbucks or any place with public Wi-Fi that I can then tap into and respond. But no, I thought I'd be losing my mind. And Kim, it's been a beautiful thing. I find that I'm less stressed. I'm eating right. I think I've lost weight.
I think I would panic.
You look fabulous.
Thank you.
Yes, you're
Thank
glowing. You. You're absolutely glowing. You don't have that dull sheen that people get when they look at a screen.
Judy, you can stop talking now. Judy Pilak is in the studio. She this has been the longest, most drawn-out bit. Nobody cares.
You're obsessed, John.
Nobody cares about the ring anymore, except that because... We wanted to see the ring. You were bragging that you'd have access to a ring, and it's been a week now. You ain't brought the ring in. Do you have the ring today?
I got the ring, John.
All right, do you have the song to play, Olaf? Hit it. Everybody wanted to see and talk about the Cubs World Series ring like 2 weeks ago. And Judy said, oh, I've got one. My son works part-time for the Cubs, and people with the C in their name have gotten the rings. It's amazing how many rings are out there. So Judy said, I'll bring it in. So we are about to live stream. Elif, what do you need to go to watch this? Is it my Facebook page or the station's Facebook page? I'm King John on Facebook. If you like me on Facebook right now, we are live streaming and we're about to have the reveal.
Here it is. Dum da da dum.
Oh, it's got a nice ring box.
It's got a box.
It's a blue box.
It has his name on it.
Oh, very nice. That is so sweet. Show it to the camera, too, Judy. Oh,
Ta-da!
My gosh. So it looks like a giant college or high school class ring.
Yeah. Now, let's not forget he's a seasonal part-time.
I know. No, I think it's fantastic.
Ring, you know what's fabulous about this ring?
Put it on, Jude.
What's fabulous about it is it has...
So there, she's taking it out
A little
now.
Diamond, and the diamonds, like the diamonds on the field. It's got the W flag on this side. And you know what? World Series. This is a wearable ring.
Yeah. You wear
right?
it. Let me see it on your hand. Hold on. Can I see? So there it is. It's just really, there's only three words on the front of it, but it's a big landing. It says World Champs, top and bottom. In the middle, Cubs in red letters. And are those the sapphires
yes,
in the middle?
Yes, those are sapphires. No. Not sapphire. Those
rubies.
Would be
rubies.
Chips. Yeah.
Ruby
red
chips.
Rubies.
And then where are the diamonds on this thing?
On the side here. See the little.
Oh, yeah. Look at that. Holy cow.
Yeah, nice.
So it's like a diamond where it would be the top of the championship trophy, it looks like, and then diamonds on either side as well. Really?
I thought
nice.
Maybe it was a baseball diamond.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm
here.
Having
All
trouble.
All right.
Seeing
you know what?
That.
Why don't you try it on? Hold
I know
on.
You've been very possessive about that.
There
Let me
you
see.
Go.
Whoops. Whoops! Sorry, I dropped it. Oh, it's in the toilet. Wow, very nicely done. Wow, that's
it's
just
really
awesome.
A nice looking ring, isn't it? It's,
no goat on the inside or underside.
It's not really, none of
and
the,
does it have your son's name engraved
it
on
does
it?
Does not.
But he could do that on the bottom.
Yes, he will
he
do
could.
That. And for some reason,
it's
I
got
feel
a nice
like
heft.
They know that that's his ring. I don't know how, but.
Yeah, there's probably a chip in there or something tracking him. It's got the blue W on the side. I love that.
Yeah,
that's really
isn't that nice?
As well. Well, congratulations to you and him. And listen to this thing. This has got a little. That's
it's got some heft.
Yeah,
right?
That's,
yeah.
By the way, I just dented the side
of
it.
It's a schleppy ring. I mean, it is a World Series ring.
Wow. Okay, mm-hmm. So have you been wearing it or just carrying it around?
I have been carrying it. Well, it's funny. I went to the dentist today. I had to do it. I put it on. I was like, hey, Dr. Cerrone. And yeah, he flipped out. He tried, like you, to put it on.
Yeah.
But he could only fit it on his pinky.
Yeah, right. It's more fit for a juvenile hand or a female hand. Your son must have thin fingers.
Yes. He is long, thin fingers. Yes.
Well, congratulations to you guys. All right. Finally, the world championship ring is in the house.
I know, right? Are you happy? Can you let it go now, John?
I know.
Okay. Are you finished?
Okay, I'm done talking about it.
Are you sure? Because I think your listeners want to hear a little bit more about the ring.
Goodbye, Judy. Pilak, back into the newsroom. But thank you for bringing that in. Well, that is a swell ring. I'll tell you what, on eBay or Craigslist, I'm telling you, you can get a couple $1,000 for that, Jude. You can get some real money for that thing.
The Cubs get it for a dollar, remember?
Oh, yeah, right. It's 114. Speaking of things we've been doing ad nauseum here on the John Williams Show. You know that I was kind of fascinated by that conversation we had with a guy in Texas, a doctor who's come up with crickets, which are nutritious, delicious, and edible. We brought them with us to our Hometown Voices tour stop at Pinstripes in Oak Brook last week. I told the guy we'd call him back and let him know what we thought. This is going to be a painful conversation. And then I have to complain to Mark Carmen about what happened at the Bulls game last night, because something very strange and wrong happened. And we'll finish this first half hour just picking up a few of these bits and pieces. And then at 1:30, we'll talk to Joe Orsolini. He is a college aid planner. He said, wow, are you overpaying for college? And here's some ways to pay a lot less. All coming up on WGN. So you were in the Wall Street Journal on page one a few weeks ago about Aketa, which is your company that makes for human consumption edible crickets. I was fascinated by it. I went with my credit card to your website, sir, and enjoying a 10% discount, was able to order some crickets delivered to my home.
And how did they taste?
You know what? It depended on which one, because I ordered them all. They were good. There's the answer to the question. They tasted good. Now, that's not the only question you should be asking. Another question is, what did you think or how did they feel? They were so dry. You know what I think you should do is do recipe ideas. Like, I would use them as croutons.
Mm-hmm.
I would put them in a salad. You know, a lot, especially like if you have a chopped salad or a salad with various ingredients, a Southwestern salad. If you folded those in there, you'd get a little of the crunch, but because you'd have some oil or some cream in there, it would sort of make the dryness of them, for me, a little more comfortable. You know what I'm saying?
I think it's a brilliant idea. And actually, we in fact have a recipe page. If you go to aketa.com and click on the recipe side, you'll see a variety of different ways that not only we've sort of, our corporate chef Jason's conjured a number of different very delicious recipes, but we actually have user-submitted recipes as well. So we have people who, just like you just suggested, you know, they actually will use them instead of croutons on their salad, or they'll actually throw them into a taco to get that really nice.
Oh, that would be good.
Absolutely.
Oh, that would be really good in a taco.
Oh, yeah. And this weekend, we were actually at Earth Day Dallas, and it was fascinating because we had all of these kids who, of course, you know, didn't have all these prejudices and are super adventurous, and they were just loving them. It was incredible.
That's interesting because I then shared them with a studio audience. We were on remote at a restaurant of all places, and I said, okay, come on up and try them. Well, it was adults, and so they had some built-in ick factors that maybe the kids don't have to get over. But my engineer, Adam, went, you know, all right, I'll try it. I'm the adventurous one. He ate it and goes, okay, not too bad. And then he found himself continually going back, like if it was a bowl of popcorn. You know how you just start popping them? He found himself doing that. And I thought, that's how we eat snacks. If we ate healthy food that way, then you win.
Absolutely. And I think that's how food in general and consumers in particular are kind of moving. It's people are having more snacks throughout the day as opposed to your traditional, very heavy, satiating meal. And what it does, and especially because it's really high in protein, you really feel full because it has that texture. It's like you described. It's kind of like a corn nut or a sunflower seed.
Yeah.
It kind of has that dryness, but it really does fill you up. And it's you recall, I mean, the Seattle Mariners, you know, were selling grasshoppers in their stadium. Well, now they're actually selling our Arrieta crickets there too. And so it's now becoming a very interesting snack, even in the most mainstream sport in the United States, like baseball, where people are, instead of having popcorn, having all those kernels stuck between their teeth, they're actually munching on some very tasty Texas barbecue crickets or spicy hot.
I like the sour cream and onions one. Is that
you know,
the flavor?
So everybody in the office has their own favorite flavor, and we kind of have on a board, we actually draw how many votes each flavor keeps getting. And so surprisingly, it's kind of even right now, although spicy hot seems to be a little bit ahead of the pack for some reason.
I like the vinegar and salt one. Is that what it is?
Yeah, the sea salt and vinegar. That's actually one of our favorites.
All right. Well, I just wanted to, I told you I'd get back to you. So I did. And I can fully, you know, what you should do is now spend a lot of money advertising this on WGN Radio in Chicago.
We may very well do that, and I look forward to talk to your production team. And actually, just like we did last time, we still have a coupon code for your listeners who can use WGN on our website, and they'll get 15% off their first purchase. But thanks for having me again, John. It was a blast, and I'm really glad you enjoyed them.
I admire and appreciate your innovativeness, your courage in trying to defeat some, you know, built-in cultural hurdles. So good luck to you. Keep up the good work, Muhammad, and we'll visit again down the road.
Look forward to it. Thanks a lot, John.
Muhammad Ashour is the CEO of Aspire Food Group, and it's Arrieta with two T's and one K, Arrieta.com. All right, Mark Carmen's on one more phone line. I told you we had a few things we needed to clear up here, so let's talk to Mark. Hey, Mark, it's John. How are you?
John, how am I supposed to follow that up? I mean, come on. You raised the bar to the moon, and now I'm here to talk sports. I can't live up to that.
Yeah, I feel for you, man. That wasn't fair, was it?
I mean, it was completely unfair, but that's okay. How are you?
Okay, I've been calling you lately just to complain about or sound out some sports ideas, thoughts, questions, that sort of thing. I got another one for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm watching the Bulls game. And God bless the Celtics. I'm a big fan of their coach, and I have nothing against the Celtics, but I want to see the Bulls win. And I'm not surprised that we lost the two that we did, because, frankly, I'm surprised we won the two that we did. Their guard, Isaiah Thomas, carries the ball. He turns the ball over. He carries the ball. And Hoiberg, after the game, complained about that, and he was very diplomatic about the way he did it, because Thomas is going through some stuff, so he doesn't want to kick a guy while he's down. But he said, so I respect him. He's a warrior. God bless him. However, he's cheating. He cheats all the time. Your thoughts, Mark Carmen.
Okay, so Isaiah Thomas' sister died in a one-car accident, which was tragic. Isaiah Thomas is a great guy. Isaiah Thomas is one of the top five point guards in the game of basketball. Isaiah Thomas, all this is true, John, carries the basketball. You know who also carries the basketball? I'd say 95% of NBA players.
As egregiously, it's funny because when I was watching Charles Barkley and Shaquille O'Neal and all those guys talk about it, and so they started to play the video, and I went, holy cow. You know, he picks the ball up. It looks like he's going to pivot, but it looks like he's going to capture the ball so you can kind of get close to him. But then he puts the ball back down in the other direction. Well, you can't guard that. And that's Hoiberg's point, and I think it's fair.
Yeah, no, listen, he has a point, but they're not going to call that. It would be like you walking into work out of nowhere and saying, listen, I'm very upset that there isn't cream here. Why is there not cream for the coffee? How is it not laid out for me perfectly? Like, everybody would just turn and look at you like you're out of your mind. Like, bring your own cream or something. Like, he's totally out of left field with this complaint. It's not like something that was even being talked about. So, and I don't think it's going to be called, and he's going to get fined, and his players are looking at him like he's nuts too. I mean, Jimmy Butler's kind of like, yeah, I'm not, I don't get paid to think about that. I get paid to play basketball. Like, it's just, it's not how the game's, like, that's part of the game right now.
Yeah,
no
right.
No other coach in the league has said anything like this.
Well, it's funny because now that you mention it, they did not talk about that during the broadcast, did they?
No. John, I'm at the press conference yesterday, right? And he starts going into this. And I start looking around like,
Did I miss something?
Yeah, like, and you know, so, and I'm there often, but I'm not there every single night. So I asked like some of those guys, like, did you have any idea that Fred had this problem? Because I've been watching, you know, I've watched every game in the series. I've been at all the home games. No, had no idea. It was just bizarre. And
how tall is Isaiah Thomas?
He is 5'8". You know, I interviewed Isaiah Cannon last night, who he buried in December and didn't play him the rest of the year. And now in game 4 of the Eastern Conference, you know, first round playoffs, he's out there 34 minutes and it's like he's indispensable. So I don't know why I'm throwing that in there.
Well, I don't either, because he's got to do something. I mean, he obviously with Rondo down, he's got to do something. So I don't know what the solution there is, but at least I get it.
Right, but he's had Jerry and Grant playing, who has proven that he can't play, and he's had Michael Carter-Williams proving that he can't play. Isaiah Cannon, like, was a capable guy, and for whatever reason, I just buried him. My point is that Fred just makes a lot of odd decisions, and when he makes those decisions, he really sticks to them. Like, Denzel Valentine can't get in the series, and then all of a sudden he's going to go die on the vine of Isaiah Thomas is carrying the basketball when, like, there's so many other things going on.
Right. So you think that was just a poor excuse for why we played badly or didn't win in that game?
Right. I think it was just a really odd excuse. You know, in Memphis, I don't know if you're following what's going on in Memphis, David Fisdale gets up after game 2 versus San Antonio, the Memphis Grizzlies and the Spurs, and he screams about the officiating and says, don't rook us. I know that Greg Popovich has been a coach forever and nobody knows who I am, but don't rook us, don't rook my team. And his team rallied around it and they paid his fine. Like, he had fined $25,000, and his teammate, you know, that who make a lot more money than he does, although he's incredibly well compensated too, they all paid the fine. No one's paying Fred Hoiberg's fine. You know?
I hear you, man. All right. Well, I stand corrected. Like I said, Mark, it was a stupid thing to bring up, and the coach is an idiot for even going there.
Yeah. I mean, that's just my opinion, John, but I it was really bizarre.
Good to talk to you, Carm. I'll visit with you another day. When are you on this radio station again?
I will be there. We're doing our draft special.
Oh, yeah. I saw Adam earlier today. So you guys are doing that. That's a podcast you're doing, though, right?
You know, it's going to be Hamp, OB, and Kaz and myself from 2 to 4 on Saturday, and then we'll have the regular beat show 4 to 7.
Okay, man.
So, and I'll pop in sometime this week as well. So, John, great to be on with you, my friend.
Thanks. Take care. Mark Carman, the sports, just kind of chatting a little, because I watched the game, and then I saw them analyzing it afterwards, and I thought, wow, that I've never looked at it that closely. That is frustrating. There's another perspective from Carm. A smile on his face is Joe Orsolini. He is in our studio. Joe, welcome to the program. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Joe is a certified financial planner at College Aid Planners. If you visit collegeaidplanners.com, you can reach Joe. He's here for the Fed's Money Smart Week. If you were listening to the Business Lunch, you heard an overview of it, but coincidentally, I had asked you to come in today to talk specifically about what you do. First of all, Money Smart Week is a national thing that started in Chicago. It's about financial literacy. The Chicago Fed obviously thought we would all benefit if we learned a little bit more. So people like you span out and try and help people understand their money better, right?
Exactly.
What a good idea. So your, what is it, seminars that you put on this week?
Yeah, I'm going to be at 3 different libraries throughout Chicago. I'm going to be in Frankfort tonight, Itasca on Wednesday, and then Forest Park on Thursday.
What's the biggest mistake people make about college planning?
The biggest thing I find is that families, as they head into this process, don't sit down first and figure out what they can afford to pay for college. You know, a lot of times they'll do the system backwards. They let the kid go out and pick all kinds of schools that they probably can't afford, and then they try and fit it in their budget. So you really need to figure out what you can afford and then have the kids find schools that are going to fit into that family budget.
It's funny because the kids have a safe school and a reach school and schools in between. But I don't ever recall when we were doing this, say, okay, and here's the financial range. We thought about the academic range. Are you smart enough? Or if you're an athlete, are you good enough? But we never thought, are we rich enough? You know, so if the kid came back and said, hey, I got into Dartmouth or the University of Chicago, you'd say, hooray, now what?
Well, and that's the problem. Then parents make bad decisions. That's when they're starting to add, you know, the student loans to the kids, to themselves, jeopardizing their retirement, you know, putting these kids with life-altering debt, and that's really what you need to avoid.
But if you can get into Northwestern and you can get into Illinois State, obviously one is more expensive than the other, but you'd still be better off going to Northwestern, wouldn't you?
Not necessarily. I mean, Illinois State's a great school if you're going to be a teacher. So is Northwestern, but it's Illinois State's a third the cost.
And isn't there a return, though? Won't you earn more if you have a degree from Northwestern?
No, because when you come out and get hired by that school district, they're going to pay you the same union wage scale no matter where you went to school.
If I'm going to be a teacher, what about if I'm going into business or broadcasting or something else?
There was actually a study done by a Princeton professor. A guy was named Alan Krueger. He was actually chairman of the White House Council of Economic Advisors. He studied this exact question you're asking. And he went back, took two sample groups of kids, equal academic profiles. One got into the elite Ivies and went there. The other got into elite Ivies but went someplace else, went to the state school. Tracked those two groups over 25 years, no significant difference in income. Repeated that study 10 years later, same exact results. It's the student, not the school they attend, that makes them successful.
But then what will I tell my friends at cocktail parties?
That does become the issue for you, you know, the bragging rights. And you know, one of the things that I work with families on is sometimes it's better to drop down the brand name of school because you're going to get a better deal financially. Ideally, you want your kids to be in the top 25% of that school student population. So if you're going to one of those stretch schools where you're just barely getting in, you know, to me, that the only thing that's going to stretch is your wallet because they're not going to give you any financial aid. You know, we got 100 kids lined up waiting to take that spot. If you don't want to pay that price, take it or leave it.
That's another measure nobody told me to think about that. Try and go be in the top 25% of the school that you're in. Then you'll get more academic aid.
Exactly.
Like how much should I expect?
$10,000, $15,000, $20,000 is not unheard of. You know,
Give me an example.
North Central College out in Naperville. Typical 100% of kids at that school get money from the school, and on average you're getting about $19,000.
Really? What's it cost to go to North Central?
North Central's around $46,000.
Is it really?
So.
By the way, North Central, I'm sorry. Pardon my aghast, but I didn't know it was that expensive.
Yeah.
$46,000 to go to North Central.
$46,000. When I'm working with families, you know, my goal is to take you from $40,000 to $60,000 sticker prices, get you somewhere in the maybe the mid to low 20s.
Okay, but why do they even say 46? Because nobody pays 46. You said the average student gets 19 off, right? Okay,
yes.
So that's 27. So then why are we even advertising 46?
I mean, there are some schools that like to brag that we're one of the most expensive.
Right.
I mean, Washington University historically has always been, down in St. Louis, has always been one of the most expensive. But, you know, people get aid and that price comes down. It's more of a bragging point.
Does anybody at North Central pay 46?
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah, right. You're a fool if you do.
Yeah.
Or you didn't research, you didn't do your homework.
Yeah.
Or maybe you're in the wrong school. Maybe mm-hmm. you should have gone then to a school that's less academically rigorous. Go to SIU Carbondale, where I went to school, and then maybe you'll move up in the class rank.
Exactly.
And by the way, SIU Carbondale was a great experience for me.
Yeah.
Joliet Junior College was a great experience for me. I had 6 great years at Joliet Junior College. I'm kidding. I went there for 2 years, got my associate's degree. Then I went to Carbondale, went there for 2 years. Not a lot of bragging rights for me academically, but I thought the teaching was really good.
Yeah. My philosophy is get your undergraduate degree on the cheap at a solid school. If you're going to spend the big dollars for the brand name, do that in grad school. That's where it's going to make the difference.
So everybody fills out a FAFSA,
correct?
Right? I mean, so just walk me through what are some good ideas for people to do if they want to lower their costs.
Well, you know, the big thing is school selection these days. Certainly, if you're on the lower income side of the world, and I'm probably talking less than $70,000 of income, there's some need-based aid. The Federal Pell Grant, the Illinois MAP grants are available. But most of the money these days to reduce the cost of college is coming in terms of merit aid. Merit aid is, you know, the school wants you to come there for whatever reason, we're going to knock something off the price. And so that's really what you want to target is, you know, which schools have money available for merit aid and who's going to want my kid and how do I leverage that? So a lot of times that means private colleges. People get scared away from private colleges because they have those $40,000, $60,000 sticker prices, but those are the schools that have the money to give for merit aid.
Give me an example of that.
You know, being in the top 25%, having an ACT over 30, those are some things that schools will want to attract get you.
Could you come back to earth, though? I mean, 30 is a good
30 is a fantastic score. But I mean,
what if I'm in band? What if I'm in orchestra?
Certainly those are things that, you know, some schools may give you $1,500 scholarships for.
Really?
Absolutely.
I mean, because I thought that was something that would get you into the school, but then they'll actually use that as part of your financial calculation?
Mm-hmm. That will come into play if you're going to, you know, be in the band. You know, sometimes if you're a music major, that's a little different, but if you're going to play in the pep band or they may throw, you know, $500, $1,500
your way. Is it negotiable? I mean, is there any give and take or you're getting their menu?
Well, every school will kind of slot you in. What I always recommend for families is you want to look at between 4 to 6, maybe 6 to 8 schools, because you want schools to be competing for your kids. Because you might like school A, but school B might have a better financial aid package. There's nothing wrong with going back to school B and A and saying, hey, school B over here is going to cost us $5,000 less. Is there any way you can make that difference up so we can say yes to your school? But you have to have competitive schools. And generally that means, you know, private colleges.
Well, there's nothing wrong with going to the state schools, though.
No, there's some
the state schools start significantly. They're about half what the private schools are.
Absolutely.
Right?
One of the things I would say, though, you got to be careful. You know, when you're staying in state, there's the great value. When you go out of state, the problem is when kids go out of state, usually they want to go to the flagship school. They want to go to Indiana University or Wisconsin-Madison or Michigan. Those schools are $45,000, $50,000, and there's no merit aid at those schools. You know,
there's no reciprocity with Illinois.
No, no. When you go to some of the second-tier schools in those states, you know, be it Iowa State or Grand Valley, Truman State, some excellent schools, you know, you can go to those schools as an out-of-state resident for basically the price you're going to pay to go to Northern, Southern, Eastern, or Western, any of our directional quote-unquote second-tier schools.
Because everything, what is it in Illinois? Is it Northwestern and U of I at the top? Well, Northwestern's private.
U of I
at the top. Everybody lives underneath that,
yeah.
Right? And the University of Illinois borrows, I think, some trouble for itself with admissions because they have been so interested in foreign students.
Yeah, foreign students pay full price, so
they pay a lot.
Valuable, yes.
Yeah, do they get any discount, the foreign students, the Chinese kids?
Generally, I'm going to say no.
I don't, that's my understanding.
I don't
as
have
well.
Any, and I haven't seen any award packages, but I would think that they're hitting them up for full price.
You may have a question or comment for our guest. His name is Joe Orsolini. He's a certified financial planner at collegeaidplanners.com, collegeaidplanners.com. So if you're sending your kid to school, you want some advice, here's your chance to call WGN. It's Joe Orsolini, certified financial planner at College Aid Planners, who's got some very concrete, helpful ideas about how to pay for college. We're taking calls after you say two things on the air that you said off the air. One is tax credit. What does that mean?
Tax credit, yes. If you have a kid in college and you're paying college tuition, there's a tax break. It's called the American Opportunity Credit. And if you spend $4,000 on tuition and books, you get a $2,500 credit on your federal taxes. That's money back in your pocket, $2,500.
And that's not $2,500 off your taxes, for which you save about $800.
Yeah.
It's $2,500. You get $2,500.
Correct. Last year you had a $5,000 refund. All things stay the same. You paid college tuition. You got a $7,500 refund.
If I have to borrow for my kid's college, where should I borrow it from?
Your best bet, if you've got it, is home equity. A lot of people don't like to put their house on the line paying for kids for college. But if, you know, something bad happens and you've got a federal student loan or a private student loan, that debt never goes away. You can't get rid of it in bankruptcy. So something bad happens, you're out in the streets, and you still have that debt hanging over your head. Home equity, if something bad happens, you know, you wipe your hands of the debt, you're free and clear. Plus, you have the ability to deduct that no matter what your income is.
152, let's pick up some phone lines. This is Sheila. You're on WGN. Hi, Sheila.
Hi. I was wondering if you know about scholarship or any financial aid scholarships, whatever, for children that have IEPs. It's a different, I mean, you're not talking about top 30% of the class.
What is IEP, Sheila?
Individual education program. That's children with learning disabilities. Disability might just be very small, but they still have an IEP, and they need a little extra help.
Yeah, what do you know about that?
Well, I don't know of anything, any specific IEP scholarships, but I would tell you a couple of things on that. Certainly go to the college that you're looking at, because some colleges do a lot of extra work for folks with IEPs, and they may have additional money that just wouldn't come through the normal financial aid process at the schools. Also, you know, I would always encourage folks, check your local high schools. See what scholarships they have available, because they're going to be tuned in. That's where you have a shot of winning a scholarship. You know, you do the Dr. Pepper $1 million giveaway, you and 400,000 kids are applying for that. I used to run the scholarship for the Lombard Chamber of Commerce. We'd have between 12 and 15 kids apply for two $750 scholarships. So you got a much better chance looking at some of the local stuff, and you might find, you know, some local IEP-type scholarship.
Sheila, good luck. Thanks for the call. Joan, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hi, John. Thanks for taking my call. I currently have two kids in college, and I've always wanted to know the answer to this question about the FAFSA. Every time you go to a seminar or you talk to guidance counselors at the schools, everyone says fill out the FAFSA. And I actually have a thought that the FAFSA could be a disadvantage if you fill it out, if your EFC or your estimated family contribution to college ends up being really high, then schools see that information. And I have a feeling that schools could look at that and say, well, that family could afford that, so we're not going to give them as much other money from our school. Even if your child, which I have examples of kids that have over 30 ACT in the top 10% of their class and get less merit money, even when you apply early and things like that. So I actually think the FAFSA can come back to hurt you, and I wanted to know what your guest, Jeff Joe, thought of that.
Well, I'm all in favor of filling the FAFSA form out, because even if you have a lot of money, you're filthy rich loaded, go ahead and fill that out. Because what colleges are looking at these days, they're concerned about graduation rates. And if they've got two kids and the family makes $200,000 and one family's got, you know, 100 grand sitting in the bank and the other has nothing, they're just living paycheck to paycheck and no savings. If you're a college and you're concerned if something happens to that family, which one are you going to give the merit aid to? I'm seeing more and more of the wealthier families getting more of the merit aid, because the colleges know that those kids have the wherewithal, the family has the wherewithal. If some bump happens in the road, that they're going to be able to get through that college experience.
Hmm. Joan, thanks for the call. her experience notwithstanding, maybe some kids are getting in and don't even realize that their money is paving the way.
Yeah. And sometimes it's, you know, she mentioned the different kids getting different offers. It really depends on the school. You know, when you go to an out-of-state public university, kind of a flagship, you know, school, the, you know, Big Ten, University of Michigan, Wisconsin, yeah, Madison, those schools don't have a lot of merit money. So even if you have great grades, you're not going to get any merit money.
Yeah. Tom, you're on. Yeah, right. I get that. Tom, you're on the air. We got about a minute left.
Yeah, hi. Do you take into consideration the alumni organization in terms of getting jobs for the summer and jobs after school? Because in my particular case, that was very important.
Yeah, I would, like, if you went to Notre Dame, if you went to Purdue and all those guys hiring are from Purdue or Notre Dame or U of C, that does help you out of the gate, doesn't it?
Absolutely. But pretty much every college is going to trot out somebody that makes $1 million and has some great alumni. But you bring up a very good point. When you're looking at colleges, you know, so often people go look at the dorms and the cafeteria and the athletic facilities. One of the first places you should go look at is the Career Center. See who's on campus. See what companies are interviewing. That will give you a feel for how good that school is at getting kids out in the working force and employed.
Thanks for the call. We're out of time. But just to that point, and then we'll wrap it up here. You said that the school you go to, ISU versus U of I, really doesn't matter that much in lifetime earnings unless you're planning on going to graduate school. Then you said a better school, if you will, actually helps you down the road.
Yeah, because nationally, only 56% of kids are going to get out of a four-year college in 6 years. So a lot of people aren't going to make it through. That's not who your networking group is going to be. You want to be, when you go to graduate school, those people have all proven they can do college work. They're all in their careers. That's where you want your networking group to be.
CollegeAidPlanners.com. I'm going to have you on the show again, Joe. It's nice to
Thanks.
Meet you. CollegeAidPlanners.com. Joe Orsolini.
Hey, I don't have that memorized.
Big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Here we go.
Well, that's ambitious.
Here's John Williams.
Ordinary people, when working together, can do extraordinary things.
Here's your president.
Lord have mercy.
Not sure where that other audio is coming from, but I think we can ignore it. The question is, can I? It's 209 on WGN. This is John Williams. We're in the Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue, and we invited our own Ryan Burrow to come back and talk to us a little bit more about this. You heard his report in Bob's News. You were just at the president's speech or talk or whatever that was.
It was a panel discussion. If this were taking place at UIC or at Northwestern or any of our other wonderful colleges, and it was any other political professor, we'd just go,
whatever.
Another afternoon thing. But this was the former president at his old stomping grounds.
And his real first major public appearance since he was president.
Yeah, exactly. And really, that's you as a news reporter, you sit back and you say, OK, I just watched something that took, you know, about 90 minutes. And what is the takeaway? What is the main thing that we come away with? And that's it. It was the former president speaking for the first time. I didn't really get anything.
He didn't make any news.
Not really. Nothing brand new coming out of that. Look, a lot of the themes he talked about, you know, bringing in young people and talking about, you know, civic engagement and getting involved, and not just at the, you know, national level, but getting involved in PTAs and PTOs and you know, condo associations and, you know, various other organizations, trying to bring people up to want to be part of, you know, water reclamation districts and dog catchers, if you will, you know, and trying to engage. That was all stuff he talked about in his farewell address, you know, just trying to get people more involved and try to bridge some of this gap we have between the two parties.
He didn't say anything like, oh, now look, this guy, the president, by the way, that's my Obama.
See, it's getting there.
He's crazy. We got to get rid of him. The North Korea thing, he's in over his head.
He didn't mention the Trump administration at all. There was some little inkling when there was a question about immigration policy, but he gave a lot of generic answers that he's given before about, you know, there are some people who are nervous about security. There are some people who, you know, look, come to this country just like many of our ancestors did. So it was kind of a watered down answer. It didn't really attack Trump or
I suppose he's wise right now. He doesn't need to score any points.
No, exactly. And this has always been kind of the unwritten rule for former presidents. Stay out of the new president's business. You don't know what's going on. You don't know what books or information he's got that you don't have. And while you feel like you may understand something, back off and let him do his thing.
I suppose if he is going to engage that way, he'd better pick his spots and just lobbying something hateful or dumb or, you know, even if it was right, I'd be very surgical about my use of my presidential podium.
And that's what he said at the farewell address. Look, if there's somewhere that I see someone, you know, being wronged, whether it be some kind of community or some kind of population, I'll speak up if I see something. But, you know, for the most part, this is the next president's deal, not mine.
Doesn't sound like it was all bad stuff. Remember, too, his audience was college kids, not Republicans or Democrats or me. It was college kids. So he said things like this.
On the back end now of my presidency, now that it's completed, I'm spending a lot of time thinking about what is the most important thing I can do for my next job. Although there are all kinds of issues that I care about and all kinds of issues that I intend to work on, the single most important thing I can do is to help in any way I can prepare the next generation of leadership to take up the baton.
Boring. Boring. Come on. Make some news, Mr. President.
Yeah, it was a little dry at times.
Although you told me off the air, say it on the air, maybe you recall exactly what the point was. He was talking about don't imagine what you're going to be when you grow up or what you're going to do when you grow up.
It was an interesting point because he had a panel of six young leaders. Some of them had actually run for office to this point. Think about that. I mean, let's face it. They've got their work cut out for them, and they're probably well on their path. But he said as he's writing this book, which I guess made news. We all knew he's writing a book. It's $65 million the family's getting for writing this book. But he talked about, you know, losing elections. And he talked about when he lost elections, he always realized that he was running these elections just to make that next step. And it was never about what it was he was who he was trying to reach or what it is he was pursuing. It was all about him and thinking, okay, I got to make this next step. So the quote was, worry less about what you want to be and more about what you want to do. And he's trying to instill to them, look, it's not just one thing to rise up and say, I want to be a congressman one day. It's something to say, well, you know what? That group over there is being wronged. And it's being wronged because their water is unclean or they're not getting the health services they need or, you know, X or Y or Z, and that's what I'm going to put my attention in and focus on, not how is this going to advance my career.
That's pretty good. That's a nice message.
I don't think that works just for politics too. I mean,
no kidding.
You've got every, know what it is that you want to do, and you know, the job description may not fit it, but if you're serving the people you want, then.
Well, we all fall into that. I want to be the CEO of the company. Why? You want to be a CEO, or do you want to be the CEO of the company because you want to innovate or come up with a better way for the world to live? You know, then be the CEO. But otherwise, if what you really want to do is innovate, then find a way to be an innovator. You don't have to be a CEO to do that, he said. Well, that's a nice message from the president. So kids must have been just tickled that they were there.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was an invite only. Most of them were leaders at various organizations, whether it be high school or college.
Really?
And so, yeah, I mean, it was a favorable crowd. Anytime you get an invite from a former president, you know you're not going into hostile territory.
Well, especially this president for that crowd. I mean, does he still have the rock star kind of aura?
So. Yeah, he came in. He walked in from the home. We got shots of him walking out of his home. He's got the sunglasses on. He's got the suit and the entourage around him. No tie. Same thing when he walked in, coolest guy in the room, I guess. Obviously, all the eyes on him.
Coolest guy in the room next to you, sir. Thank you.
All
right. So there's Ryan Burroughs' report on President Obama speaking at, was it UFC today?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Nice to see you, friend. It's a 2:15. So here we go. Another week, another airline story. I have two clips for you and then another perspective on what you may have heard. Last week and the week before, it was United Airlines, right? They dragged poor Dr. David Dow off, and we haven't heard the end of that, Lordy, no. And now it's American Airlines' turn. There's a woman getting on. Did she have a German accent? Was there some sort of accent you heard in her voice?
I think she's French.
French. She's walking onto the plane. She's pulling a suitcase, and she has a stroller. She has twins, one in her arm, one in the stroller. You're not supposed to bring the stroller on the airplane, lady. So now what do? We have an emotional, upset lady, and she is crying. She is really sobbing. And I got to tell you, I thought, lady, get a grip. What happened? What happened between you and the little place where you sit and then you show your ticket? You walk down that little walkway, the covered walkway thing, and now you are just in the first class door well there, and you've completely disintegrated. What has happened? What happened? Pull it together. Okay, now what we don't know is what happened, but this one guy gets up, and he's really ticked. He's ready to fight the airline attendant. There's another guy on the plane. There's a bunch of airplane staff there at the front of the plane around this lady, tending to or not tending to her, and one of the passengers is ready to beat them all up. So what did they do to this lady to get this thing to this point? We'll pick it up here in a minute, and I'll take your call on this story, too. This is inside that American Airlines flight.
What's the guy's name?
Actually, the plane hasn't taken off.
But
the lady is beside herself. She's inconsolable. She's a mother of twins. The daughter in her arms looks like she's maybe two or so. There's so much you don't see in this story. Why is she crying? The story is that the attendant, in telling her that she couldn't have the stroller on the plane, has grabbed the stroller from her and almost hit one of the children. That's bad. And clearly this passenger who's intervening on her behalf is upset about it, but we just don't see that. And I read online today a perspective from another passenger who was on the flight, and they said, they offered a little more perspective. For instance, what you're also seeing a lot online today, besides the woman crying, Elif, let's play the second cut, besides the woman crying, is this passenger who gets up to try and intervene on her behalf.
Hey, bud. You do that to me and I'll knock you flat.
Stay out of this.
So it goes like that for a little while. Boy, that makes you want to get in a tube and go 30,000 feet into the air with all those people, doesn't it? I think if I'm in the back, I tell everybody, you know what? We're going to fly out tomorrow. I do not want to be on a plane with a stressed flight crew and crazy stressed passengers. Unless they come through with the drink cart right now, I think we all need to just get off and do a reset. Everybody take a chill pill. Everybody go to the bar. We're all going to come back in an hour, hour and a half. In fact, the thing was delayed over an hour. But the other story is that the woman is bringing a really large suitcase. She's rolling it in with. It's not going to fit in the overhead. I love those people. She has a stroller with her. You're not supposed to have a stroller. So she's got one kid she's pushing with what the woman described online as a stroller, the likes of which you would see at the mall. She's pushing that down the aisle. She's got this giant roller case, and she's got two kids with her. She's stressed. She's having a bad day. And I guess she did not get the treatment that she should have. I mean, American Airlines has grounded one of the flight attendants and apologized. The woman got an upgrade on the next flight and a $1,000 voucher. She flew first class eventually. I don't have any quibble with her, but I think this is what happens now. Everybody's got their phones out. They're going to take video, and it's always going to look a little late. We don't see exactly what happened, and it's always going to be one-sided. It'll be from the perspective of the advocate in this case, the man who's trying to stick up for her. Well, where's the person who's sticking up for the airline attendant? Did they just fly off the handle this week, or did they have some reason to be stern with her? That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. I don't know if you've seen this or want to comment. I'll bet you do. 312-981-7200. I think this is Herb. Is that Herb online too? Hey, Herb, it's John. You're on the air. What's up?
Yes, it is. A comment on the two problems. The first one, like you said, the whole picture isn't out there with Dr. Doe or Dow, whatever his name is. But a lot of his comments aggravated the situation. I used to work for the airline. My ex used to work for American, matter of fact, for 40 years, and 30 of those years as a boarding gate. That problem should have been solved at the boarding gate with the stroller.
I know.
But the thing is, passengers now, they're always right for some reason, and the employee is always wrong for some reason, because everybody's got to, you know, placate the problem. Unfortunately, the airlines are now loading planes like cattle cars. When we worked for the airline, we used to be able to board decently, get a decent meal on board. Now it's like 5,000 people on a plane because what? The airline wants to make money and have those planes solid.
They really are packing them in there. And really, I'm with you. I'll blame some of this on the airline. It does feel like a cattle call anymore. And I don't blame them for wanting to maximize their profits. But somewhere along the way, they've sort of lost that touch. I totally agree with you on that. And one last note. Herb, thanks for the call. What about this guy who's now picking a fight with the airline attendant? I'm not exactly sure he should have been allowed to stay on the airplane either. Unless they're pummeling that poor woman. The flight crew did not have sticks with them. The captain was right there point blank, and he seemed to be not that animated. In fact, it's kind of weird. The captain seemed really checked out on this thing. He wasn't intervening at all. It was kind of strange. But the guy who stands up, and now he's ready to start throwing punches at the staff because they're not treating the passenger correctly. I'm not real sure he doesn't deserve a little post or pre-flight discipline, right? If you're picking a fight with the crew, isn't that kind of against the law? Justin is on line 4. Jump in here, Justin. What did you want to say?
You know, you made a comment about how people nowadays, they always want to take out their cell phones. They always want to record everything that's going on. And I have to agree with you. We become a world of people that are so combatant that at any given second, they want to record something, throw it online. The media gets a hold of it.
Yep.
The media, a lot of the time, they don't have the facts.
Right.
They don't have the full story. And then you have the people who are watching the news, and they're blowing up over things that they don't know all the facts for.
Yep.
Now, I'm not trying to defend the airline in what that one person did, because as you said, obviously the woman was stressed out. And all that does is it leads to nothing but bad situations with people getting angry over things that they don't even know why they're getting angry.
And it's shame on me, Justin, but I get mad at the people with the phones because we use those like weapons. We say, aha,
right?
You'll be on the evening news. I'll ruin you with this video. And you could.
Right. No, you're 100% right. I the people I get upset with are those with the cell phones, because it's not always necessary.
Yeah.
You can't always tell a full story by a simple video. It's the same thing as being at work and say you're helping a coworker or something, your manager walks by, they get upset with you thinking that you're not doing your job, but you're just trying to help somebody else. They don't know the full story. It's the same thing when you record somebody in public when they're in an altercation. All of a sudden, you have all these people getting mad at an airline when they never saw what happened leading up to that altercation.
I'm glad you listened. Thanks for the phone call.
Hey, thank you.
That's Justin. What did you want to say, Robert? You're on WGN. Hi.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm calling. I've listened to you all talk about this in like the past couple of weeks. And I work for a marina in the River North area. And I just hope that this contagion, as far as I call it, as far as the passengers and crews of vessels, and that can extend, as far as I'm concerned, to aircraft, having a combative relationship. I always thought that if a vessel is flagged, meaning that if it has a flag of a country on it, the captain is the ultimate authority of that vessel.
Yep, he is.
And that extends to the law of the sea. And, you know, what we do at the marina, if there's a disturbance of any kind, we don't physically remove the guests, but we would actually dock at the next pier or dock and, you know, call ahead and have that guest removed with the law enforcement if necessary. Because I think that the whole issue here is that people forget that a vessel is an extension of a country, and so is an aircraft. And those vessels, be they boats or planes, fly the flag of the country because they're representing that. And the captain is actually an extension of, you know.
I got to tell you, Robert, that's what was frustrating to me about this video. I wanted the captain to get more involved because he's the law.
And that's the whole thing. I mean, what happens if there is a serious issue and you have passengers questioning the authority of the captain? Now, I'm not saying that the crew always should be professional. You know, we don't have Pan Am or TWA. I mean, the airlines have become, and I'm not using this as a pejorative, you know, say like as a Megabus or Greyhound. But even on Greyhound, when you take Greyhound, they have an announcement, and that driver tells you if you do anything stupid, you are subject to federal prosecution.
That's why I got to go, Robert. I appreciate your call. You've got a lot of interesting things to say about this, doing what you do. But I'm just surprised the captain didn't get more involved, and I think the passengers need to keep that in mind. Everybody seems to sort of be King Kong out there, and that's frustrating for me. But Ron and Daniel both have something to say that's different than that, and I'm glad they called. Daniel, what was your thought about that?
I just, first off, hey, John, how are you?
Hey, good. Thanks for calling.
I tend to disagree with you and one of the previous callers that you're getting mad at the people with the cameras. You have to look. I agree that it does get out of hand a little bit. But look at how many crimes have been solved that would have gone unnoticed had people not been there with their cell phones at the ready.
Right. You told Elif that's evidence. And, Ron, you wanted to say what? You're on WGN. Hi, Ron.
Yeah, hi. Hello. Enjoy your show, John. I look at the cameras like a self-protection, almost like a concealed carry kind of a situation, a little extreme perhaps. But, people, we've had a lot of incidences lately with cameras and videos that have proved and disproved events. We had the police shootings. Now the police are carrying body cameras. It's for a reason. I think the reason is that you get positive evidence. You have, when you're a citizen and you have a complaint or somebody attacks you or you see an attack, you have something to, other than your personal.
Right. Other than he said, she said, now I've got video right here, right?
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. It's a proof kind of a thing. I do agree, it may get out of hand, but I think it also might curtail some of these situations. People are going to say, well, I gotta behave myself a little bit because 6 or 7 of these passengers are going to take pictures of me.
That's
if
a thing.
I misbehave.
That's so interesting because you wonder, that guy who was the airline attendant who was, you know, nose to nose, toes to toes with this angry passenger, He must have known this is going to be on the TV tonight and on the World Wide Web forever. Ron, thanks for the call. I got to pause. It's 2:32. The news is next. This is WGN. On the phone line is Paul Greenberg. He's the author of Four Fish, American Catch. He's a lifelong fisherman. And his latest frontline documentary, The Fish on My Plate, co-written by Paul and David Fanning and Neil Dougherty, is about the fish on planet Earth. And it's just lovely. It's so insightful. It's so well done. And it makes you think about some things that maybe you would have passed on before. So kudos to you, Paul. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much. Thanks for the really kind words.
Well, it's all true. I mean, you're a lifelong angler. You've enjoyed fishing all along, right?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up fishing with my dad. I think I caught my first fish at 3. And after my parents divorced, I spent all my divorced dad weekends fishing. So that was sort of our ultimate male bonding experience. But, it actually really sort of set the tone for the rest of my life, because fish and fishing in the ocean is, for me, the way that you reconnect with the wild world. And even when you eat seafood, it's the last wild food. So, I'm fully with the program at this point.
Think about that. When you eat seafood, it's the last wild food. Cows aren't wild. We don't eat. I've never thought about it in those terms. Everything else is sort of industrial agriculture, isn't it?
It's true. And, you know, the thing is, we're at this critical moment, though, where, you know, 50 years ago, everything we ate from the sea was wild. We've just crossed, or we're just crossing now, the border when we will have half of our seafood coming from farms. And that really is just a very, very recent trend. So that's sort of, you know, as somebody who really loves the wild, that has kind of led me into a kind of an obsession, and sort of a through line through two of my books. And it's certainly a through line through the Fish on My Plate frontline doc.
But I used to think that when we were getting food from a fish farm, that was better than pulling it from the sea. That's us raising it for consumption rather than over-harvesting the natural habitat.
Well, it should be, and it can be. Certainly when you're catching a wild animal, you're taking it out of the wild and you're killing it. On the other hand, when you go after wild fish, or if you decide you want to make yourself dependent on a wild system, you have to preserve that system. And the thing I always hold up is the example of Alaska, which, you know, still produces hundreds of millions of pounds of wild salmon for us every year. And the reason it does so is because the rivers are undammed and unpolluted, that the coastal areas and estuaries are pristine. And, you know, if you want a lot of wild fish, you got to keep the wild nice. Farmed fish, on the other hand, and farmed seafood can make up a difference if, you know, you have a situation where a fish is overfished, where there's too much fishing pressure on it and not enough of a wild habitat to support it. So theoretically, a farmed environment would be a better way of bringing that fish to our plates. Unfortunately, as a species, humans just seem to want more of both. You know, before, you know, we only ate wild, now we eat farmed, and now we eat more of both farmed and wild. So we have to figure out a way how to push down on one pedal and let up on the other one, if you see what I'm saying.
Well, you like and believe in fish. It is a food stuff we should consume, right?
I do. The thing that is not necessarily in the frontline film, but which is in the sort of subject of a book that I'm working on now about omega-3 fatty acids, is that, you know, you might compare farmed fish versus wild fish and, you know, look at those trade-offs. But the comparison a lot of people never make is between all of seafood and all of land food. And when you compare those two potentials, you have real serious differences. Almost any fish, be it wild or farmed, has a lower carbon impact and a lower general natural resources impact than any land food. Like a salmon, more efficient than a chicken, much more efficient than a beef cow. Hmm. So, you know, those are the kind of things and those kind of trade-offs I think we're going to be thinking about a lot in this century ahead.
It's funny you mentioned that. We were eating crickets on the show the other day from a guy who's pushing crickets, and he reminded us that it's 20 pounds of food for 1 pound of beef, and with crickets, the equation is much better for everybody. I guess
Absolutely.
It's true for fish, too. But when I think about the big picture, I just get sad for the
well,
help.
Here's something to make you happy. I mean, you know, we don't necessarily have to eat crickets. Personally, I'm a huge fan of oysters. huge fan of mussels. Those creatures, unlike your cricket, actually don't need to be fed anything at all. So if you're looking for the ultimate, most efficient animal that doesn't require anything, there is this whole range of creatures, the clams, the mussels, the oysters, the different kinds of seaweeds, all of those things produce a net gain of protein for the environment without taking any kind of toll.
Well, I get sad for the fish, you know, for the cod and for the ones that we've sort of decimated, and I don't know what the solution to all of that is.
I think it's a kind of a two-tiered thing. The first tier is to get wild fisheries management under control. And as you know, something that comes up in the film is that if you look at the United States, we actually have turned it around with a lot of our species. We went from a country that regularly overfished. And when I say overfished, I mean it's literally like raiding a bank account. In an ideal world, the way that fisheries should work is every year a certain surplus is generated from the wild and we harvest that surplus. The last 40 or 50 years of human development, unfortunately, has been mining the principle, and, you know, that is going into the actual heart of the stock so that no kind of surplus is produced. That we can control and that we have controlled in this country. Unfortunately, most, you know, 90% of the seafood that we eat in this country is imported, and a lot of the countries we import from don't Right. have that rule of law and don't have those systems in place.
Well, do you have advice for listeners who like fish? They want to help species. They want to help the planet. I mean, I don't know that people think about it in those terms, but maybe we should. What advice do you have for us?
Sure. Well, first of all, I always am a strong believer in wild Alaskan salmon because when you buy wild Alaskan salmon, you're supporting the pristine environment that allows those fish to exist. They're very well managed. And actually, one major point I have for all shoppers is don't buy wild Alaskan salmon fresh out of season. Wild Alaskan salmon is in season June, July, and August. Any other times, if you see it in the seafood counter, you know, seemingly fresh, it's actually been defrosted. So the better thing to do is to go to the frozen food counter where that fish has been properly processed, fresh out of the water, and buy that. And often you can get it for under $10 a pound, which, you know, again, is more than chicken, but it's worth it because I think it's a healthier protein in the end.
Okay, so I'm going to buy wild Alaskan salmon in season.
Buy your
what
wild
else?
Alaskan salmon. I'm very pro anchovy. I know that's a hard
yes,
sell
yes, you
to the
are.
American audience.
Much of the film you are pushing.
I'm pushing, but listen, I have one recipe which I call the toucan sauce, which is I hate leftover cans in my fridge. So this is a sauce which is one can of tomato sauce and one can of anchovies. And if you liquefy those anchovies gently in olive oil until they dissolve and then put the whole can of tomato sauce in, the anchovy flavor is only there as a slight note, and yet you've got all your omega-3s in your spaghetti sauce. My 10-year-old son eats it with relish, and he never even asks if
Talk
there are
me.
Fish in there or not.
What about canned tuna?
Canned tuna I stay away from. Now, you know, this is going to be controversial because it is the, I think it's the third most consumed seafood in America, but it's also the highest source of mercury in the American diet. And there's just no way to get around that. The people who support, you know, who advocate for the tuna industry say that because it contains an element called selenium, which can bond to mercury and hopefully render it somewhat harmless in the body, they say that because tuna has selenium, it's not that much of a problem. I have to say, after, you know, one of the things I did for this documentary was to eat seafood every day for a year. I had pretty high mercury, even though I stayed away
really?
From things like tuna. Yeah, because it turns out that all seafood has some, you know,
okay, but then, well, then what
mercury.
Do I care, right? I mean, if my body can manage enough mercury, maybe that's a false, maybe that's a red herring, if you will.
I don't think so. I mean, I think mercury will evidence itself, particularly for women of childbearing age and for children. I'm an old 49-year-old fogey who, you know, hopefully my childbearing years are over. But that said, I think we have to be careful of it. I think we can steer away from it. I mean, basically, I've come to the conclusion after, you know, my experiment of eating fish all year was kind of a lark. And really what people should do is conscientiously have two portions of seafood a week. I think if you did that, you would have maintained low mercury levels, and you could be relatively gentle on
that
the planet
really
if you make the right choices. Yeah.
The Fish on My Plate is a special 90-minute frontline documentary premiering Tuesday, April 25th on Channel 11. It's nice to talk to you. It's fascinating and just really, really well done. I I don't know if people are in the habit of watching these frontline things, but this one's a delight. Well done, sir.
Okay, thank you so much, guys. Take care.
That's Paul Greenberg, and that's his latest work. In this documentary, they say Alaska has more than 200 million salmon can be caught each year. 200 million salmon can be caught each year in Alaska, and that will be okay. Don't fret having eaten Alaska salmon. My producer, Elif, is worried, though, that she's America's... you probably glow at night for all the mercury you have from the tuna you've been eating now. And I love tuna, too. I love... ate a tuna sandwich yesterday. Had two tuna sandwiches yesterday. I'm done for the week. He said you should not have any more fish. And this is a guy who loves fish, loves the fishing industry. He's your fish guy. He said you should not have more than two servings of fish a week. Did I hear him correctly to say that? That's what he said. He said that he ate fish for a year, and he has high levels of mercury now. I may be able to get out of jail on this in that the tuna sandwiches I eat tend to be from Subway, and I'm not sure there's a lot of tuna in those. There may be no tuna in those. I'm not sure, but I love them anyway. And then Brenda made some tuna sandwiches with a little shaved red onion, and there was a little tomato on top. And I don't think she put much relish in there, but the onion gave it a little pop. Oh, that was good. Two servings a week. It's 2:57. Rose right around the corner. Rokan and Adivlantis in the studio now. Hi, kids.
Hello, John.
Hi, John.
There's much to discuss. Mr. Sapelsa is going to join us. You might be familiar with him. He's over at Channel 9.
And, never heard of him. That's weird.
Well, he's principal anchor, but okay, whatever.
Whatever.
kind of a big deal.
I thought the little sports guy was the star of that show.
Pat Tomasulo?
Yeah.
He's the star of the whole thing.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah. Just ask him. Now, here's the here's the deal. President Obama was in town today. And you know what? Every time President Obama comes to town, it's like a traffic nightmare.
Yeah.
Not anymore. I think he took the red line to his speech today. And, you know, got off, did his
thing.
No
problems at all?
No problems.
Really?
Right? Really?
Wait, no.
How cool is that?
Wait, the number three, Jeffrey? Which one? Which one am I going to take? He's like staring at all the numbers.
It's been a while. He probably needs the app to tell
him
how to get there.
Oh, my God. That was his Obama. Can I do my Obama and you tell us whose you like better?
Let's do an Obama off.
Okay. Now, look. I took the three, but the traffic wasn't so bad. I told the security I'm good.
Actually, that's how it is.
Close call. Close
call. I think, unfortunately... we're just, you know, there's so much emphasis now. Once they're out, you got to just forget about them. I only got one W I can do anymore. I can't even come to my mind right now.
I think my favorite is Ted Cruz when he comes to visit us.
Oh, dear.
Love that.
I don't think I've witnessed the Ted Cruz.
You're in for a treat.
Are you going to do
that? At some point, we will wind him into the program.
Yes, we'll wind him into the program. Right, you need a little bit of effect for him.
I'll have to listen.
Yes,
okay.
That's how that goes. So, all right. Well, John, you go in the other room and you listen. You wait for Ted Cruz. I know you got nothing better to do than do that right now.